When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everybody, welcome to the latest edition of the Royal Blue Podcast. My name is Joe Thomas, I am the Everton correspondent. Alongside me is my colleague Christopher Beasley. We're currently driving back from Luton, we're on the M1, caught in a whole churn of what looks like bank holiday traffic. So this could be a 4 hour drive or so by the time we're done, but hopefully it's not going to be a 4 hour podcast, Chris. The sun's shining, Everton are safe, we knew that before last night. The jeopardy was taken from that match after that fantastic week of home wins. How satisfying was that, obviously? And, you know, it made this a big part of my Brentford match report after safety was concerned. The fact that this game, this Friday night match, put before the cameras so the world could laugh at a struggling Everton. Well, Everton had the last laugh, and I think they had a party in the way end with this being a game that only really mattered to one side. That being said, obviously, there's still things that we can glean from it. Chris, I'm just wondering what your takeaways are from the 1-1 draw at Kenilworth Road.
Yeah, well, I think there's probably more jeopardy on this journey, and it's so we're okay. Like I said, it's our first podcast on the road, as it were. First Karsha style, I don't know. We were asking about which one of us was Peter Kay. Joe told me it was definitely me. Won't be any more garlic bread references, that's for sure. But yeah, look, it was a nice position to be in, a lovely position to be in for Everton, and it's probably not one that we thought that they would be in. Only in a relegation fight because of the points deductions, but no, that was a reality that the club has had to deal with, and they very much were in a relegation fight, looking over their shoulders at the likes of Luton Town for many months now. And yeah, that just amazing week at Goodison Park, I don't think even the most optimistic of us would have thought you'd get 3 wins from 3 out of that one, but it totally just changed the whole feel of this, because even if Everton could have had a decent return, I think some people might have thought that 6 or even maybe 4 points wouldn't have been the end of the world from that trio of home games, but that would have put a totally different feel on last night's fixture. If just Luton had just had anything at all to get from Everton, the fact is, you know, they were still desperate for points, and Everton went there and with their position intact and their safety already secure. But what I did like from last night's game was the fact, despite all of that, despite the fact we and the players and the fans were all able to sort of look at it from a relaxed point of view, the players certainly, there was no flip-flops there from them. Right to the very last second of the game, they were throwing their bodies on the line, Pickford making saves, Harrison Branthwaite making those late clearances, making sure that Everton still got something from that contest, and that was great to see for me.
Chris, I mean, obviously you've started with the end there. One thing that we did see from the beginning was that Sean Dyche was going to take this game seriously. Mm-hmm. You know, he spoke about this in his post-match press conference, and basically he was asked whether or not he has a preference out of who stays up, and you would suspect that personally he might do, given he had 9 years at Burnley and came through the Forest Academy as a player. But like he said, no one cared about Everton when they were down there, and he doesn't care about them. It's only one focus for him. He's greedy for more wins. And in fairness to him, I think it's difficult to dispute that, isn't it? Because if you look at it, one, they took 5 wins off Forest and Burnley, yeah, across all competitions this season. But so Luton was an opportunity, yes, to potentially start to experiment. He didn't do that at all, did he? No. In fact, he went even stronger, yeah, than he had done the previous game against Brentford by bringing in the fit again Dominic Calvert-Lewin for Youssef Chimiti. I mean, I know that's something that would have pleased you.
Yeah, well, I think that, like you say, there's obviously those personal ties, but yeah, it's all about what he wants for Everton. At the end of the day, Luton Town are the only one of those teams who he hasn't beaten this season. It would have been nice if Everton could have actually hung on and beaten them last night, because obviously they had a brace of wins at Goodison Park. And really, they did their job on Everton on a couple of occasions. I remember Everton going 4-4-2 in both of those matches, and it just wasn't working. And again, you know, a team like Luton Town come up through the Championship, and that'd be meat and drink for them. There's, you know, a couple of playing against a couple of big men, and yeah, a couple of very poor home defeats to Luton. So yeah, he wanted to go for the win, and I'm glad that he went that way, because I think that Sheffield United might be the time, if you wanted to experiment, that's when you could have a go with that, because they're already relegated. But you've got to be fair to, you know, whether he wants to do them a favour or he's not concerned about Burnley or Forest. I mean, he made it clear in his pre-match press conference that there was no old pals act in that respect, and he was going there for the win. You know, with the three wins on the bounce, you know, there was an opportunity for Everton to replicate what they did in December and actually win four fixtures on the trot. They didn't quite do that after getting their noses in front, but totally the correct attitude from them. Great, we'll come on to this. Dominic Calvert-Lewin back leading the line again, another goal for him. He was obviously delighted with that, and yeah, just the right approach to have, given that, you know, Everton were on a roll and they wanted to continue that, because given the, you know, the parlous state of the finances and the way that all the question marks which continue over the ownership of the club, really, you know, when every chunk of money counts, really, in terms of prize money. We kind of had, realistically, Everton I think could only move maybe one more position up the table, but yeah, they were out there to try and win it last night, and the correct approach. I mean, Luton were very spirited and well worth a share of the spoils, but you know, it's a hotly contested match, given that, you know, there were very sort of different needs from the two teams and expectations.
I thought Luton started the better side, and I was a little bit worried at the beginning. Tahith Chong caused a lot of problems both to Ben Godfrey down the right, and then when he tried to drop a little bit deeper and more central and pick the ball and up and run at the Everton defence, he got James Garner booked after just 8 minutes. And yeah, you know, I thought Tahith Chong was actually probably the man of the match last night. He caused problems for the whole time that he was on there. I just thought, you know, we'll come on to Ross Barkley in a minute, but again, made this a feature of my match report following you know, Friday night's game. Just one thing, you know, there are lots of things that this Everton side lacks. We know that, and we know the reasons why, and we know that Everton are going to struggle to perhaps solve all the problems over the course of a summer, which is likely to be one with another summer of low spending and trying to operate from a savvy perspective. But just seeing how dangerous pace can be in a side and how useful it could be in a side, and we had that with Tahith Chong on Friday night. You know, he constantly caused problems, and what I liked about him, it wasn't so much the end product, but it was the willingness to be an outlet for his team. You know, he could pick the ball up deep and he could just run 40 yards with it, yeah, and relieve all that pressure on defence. And whilst he didn't often create a clear-cut chance for himself or a teammate, what he did do was he won a lot of free kicks and a lot of corners. And this isn't for one second me saying I think Everton need to sign Chong over the summer, but what it is me saying is I think that when it comes to areas that Everton need to address and could potentially address even on a low budget, bringing in one or two players that could add a bit of pace to that side, I think would be a real, real boost for it. And they don't necessarily have to have the end product to get the real benefit. I remember it's been reminding me a little bit of the last few months of the survival season under Frank Lampard, mm, and the role that Anthony Gordon would play. So after the hammering at Tottenham, at that point I think Lampard realised, like, there's no point me trying to play expansive football here. I've just got to go four or five at the back, suck it up and just try and hit teams on the break. And they had a degree of success with that, and a lot of it came from the fact that, you know, you had Alex Iwobi, who's not he was a strong runner rather than a quick runner, and very fit, so obviously, you know, his impact kind of grew through a game just as everybody else got weaker around him. But Gordon's one of the quickest players in the Premier League, and how often would you see him pick up the ball on the corner of Everton's own area and then, you know, run 40 yards and win a corner or something like that? And I just think that in a side like this, in the Sean Dyche Everton, where set pieces are the biggest weapon, if you have a player like that, or two players like that, that can just, one, offer a release to a defence that's sitting deep perhaps, and two, you know, if they can have the benefit of bringing in a set piece or two at the other end of the pitch, they're as good as assists half the time. Yeah. So I thought that was really notable. But in fairness to Everton, what they did do was they kind of rode that initial pressure, and then after about the 15 minutes on, I thought Everton were the better side. You know, this Kenilworth Road's a mad old stadium. Like, you know, it really, you know, we think Goodison is in amongst its community. I mean, this one is like, I know we've seen all the stories about it since they came up, but like, I mean, it really is a stadium that is built into the homes around it. You know, the homes form part of the stands. They form, you know, partly they form fast food outlets. They form ticket offices. They form all sorts. But it really does create a kind of claustrophobic, intense, hostile environment. I thought Everton navigated that quite well after the first 15 minutes. And it began very quickly to have the feeling of an early FA Cup game.
Definitely. Yeah.
Where you knew that Everton were the senior side that were playing a team that, you know, was hopeful of causing them problems, but, you know, didn't necessarily, wasn't guaranteed to have the arsenal behind them to do so. And I thought that Everton played up to their part in that for the middle chunk of the first half, and they just started to kind of play with a bit of maturity and controlled the midfield. They managed to push themselves up, get the defence on the halfway line, and then from that use that as a platform to launch attacks. And it was quite good to see that game management, because what it did was, it gave Everton a foundation. And what we saw was, you know, Tarkowski and Branthwaite would have the ball on the halfway line, and they'd use that to feed things forward. And where the game kind of changed leading up to Everton's goal was the use and the exploitation of the right flank of Luton, mainly with Dwight McNeil. You know, first he had the opportunity where he went down for a penalty under Teddy Mengi's challenge. Deitch thinks that was a penalty. I didn't think it was at the time, but I've only really, I mean, you'll attest to this, Chris, yeah, the monitors that we had inside the stadium weren't particularly useful, so we haven't really seen it properly. But a lot of people are telling us it was a penalty. The foreboding of what was to come for Luton was the fact that the question was asked because Dwight McNeil had got the wrong side of his man. Yeah. And it was moments later, you know, it was McNeil who whipped across that dangerous ball across the face of goal. And it was Mengi again who hit it goalwards. Really good reflex save from Thomas Kaminski then. And it was third time of asking that the goal came. I think, you know, with McNeil winning the corner, Everton winning the corner, McNeil putting it in, and it'll be a different fight. It was Jared Branthwaite winning the penalty. Chris, interested for your thoughts on the penalty. For me, he's definitely manhandled him. There's no shadow of a doubt there, and I think it's good to see these type of penalties being given, because so many of them haven't been given for Everton this season. And for Everton, who are a team in the Premier League that are one of the best at attacking set pieces, you know, holding on to their players is one of the few ways of stopping them. So if clubs are going to get penalised for that, that's a good sign for Everton. Yeah. But what I did think was, you know, and I don't know how much really this matters, it probably doesn't, but it was nowhere near the trajectory of the ball. Rob Edwards, just to be fair to him at the end, said they didn't have any complaints with it. But, I mean, did you agree with that, or did you think that was a bit luck?
As soon as I saw it on the replay, I thought, he's wrestled him to the ground there. You know, Jared Branthwaite, as we all know, is a big unit. He doesn't go to the ground easily. And, Mengi, wasn't it? He had his arms around him, and down he went. You say, it was completely the other end of the area from where the ball was being whipped in. It was an off-the-ball incident, as it were. But, yeah, I'd like to see it. I know there was actually somebody else in the press box, we won't be naming names, and they had a look, and they thought not in a million years. But as soon as I saw it, I thought, that's got to be given. And as always, once the referee goes over to the monitor, the writing's on the wall. But I'd like to see that, because I think it's too many times now in the Premier League they get up to all sorts, these players, when when the crosses are coming in, and just get on with marking your man instead of getting into these silly battles and putting your arms around people and pulling them down. I mean, then we had the incident with Amadou Onana at Tottenham, it wasn't given, and then the same player does the same against Danny Welbeck at Brighton the very next game, and then it does get given. So yeah, I'm glad to see it. One thing is interesting now, I'm trying to think, Everton after belatedly have now had three penalties in the Premier League this season. All three of them though came from VAR. I wonder when we're actually just going to see a referee just point to the spot in the first place.
Yeah, it's interesting. Dominic Calvert-Lewin stepped up and put it down the middle. Four goals in seven now for Dominic, and You know, I think that's a good narrative for finishing the season, seeing things come right for him. Obviously, first half of the season was characterised by him coming back from fitness, I think. You know, still kind of learning around where his body was. Had a bit of bad luck at Aston Villa when he was taken out by Emi Martinez. Then the second half, the second third of the season maybe was characterised by, he had that little run in October, didn't he, and then just went 5 months without a goal. But he's put those problems behind him, Chris. And you spoke to him last night, didn't you? What was he like?
He was in good form. I was glad to speak to Dom. We've been up to speak for him for a while. I mean, I've known him for a long time now.
Good speech, I mean, just before we get to properly answering that, I think people might be interested to know he's a really good speaker, isn't he? And believe me, there are a lot of players that are bad speakers, and you know, you come across them over the course of your career, home and away players and things like that. But Dominic Calvert-Lewin is a joy to speak to when you get the opportunity to seek his insight, isn't he?
Yeah, he's very engaged.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Insightful, bright lad. I've known him for a while now. First spoke to him a number of years ago, and he was like that even when he was younger. He's great, and he always seems positive. I know he's had tough times, and it's been a difficult period for him at various moments. But yeah, he genuinely speaks well, and he was telling us about how he. Life is good when you know he's scoring goals the same as any centre forward. Been on a purple patch of late, you know. He's turned things around after that ended his drought up there at Newcastle United. Another pressure penalty there, very much a lot more pressure than he had last night, and he's built on that, because I've got a piece coming up later. Actually, obviously the coach piece is live now, but we've got our talking point coming up later. It's all about Dom and this journey he's been on this season, because as you say, those question marks, I think very unfairly from some, you know, questioning whether, you know, his commitment to the cause, and obviously he's had that horrific record with the injuries the previous two seasons, and then the season, like you say, started his competitive return at Aston Villa. You know, he bravely goes in for a challenge with big Emi Martinez, the goalkeeper gets whacked. I mean, it was accidental, but you know, he takes a big smash there, and he tries to battle on. You know, we were both there at Villa Park that day, and just couldn't. You know, the swelling on his face by the latter stages of that first half. You know, he couldn't say he had to go off. It's ridiculous, and you know, his dad ended up being like any proud father, a bit of a ding dong with some fans who were supposedly making remarks at that particular point, and he's had that. Got his 50th Premier League goal at West Ham United just before Halloween, and then that's just one of four players to do that for Everton, and it looks like he was turning things around. And then that awful scoreless streak, in which his personal form was particularly poor. It was unfortunate, obviously, the goals being ruled out home and away, different reasons against Tottenham Hotspur, one going to a teammate, Jack Harrison, another one disallowed. And he was kept plugging away. He also, you've got to remember in that period, he also had that ridiculous red card at Crystal Palace when referee Chris Cavanagh didn't see it in real time, and then again went over to the VAR screen, sent him off, and then that one got overturned after an Everton appeal. So he's had all various ups and downs, but I think, even though he went 23 matches without scoring, it was great the fact that he was just fit again, because I think he'd only played 17 Premier League games, both of the two previous seasons. So got himself fit, not just fit, Sean Dyche fit, and he's turned things around. And at this latter stage of the season, come May, he's finally Everton's top scorer in the Premier League. He's overhauled Abdoulaye Doucouré, who of course hasn't scored since December against Chelsea. So it's been a remarkable turnaround. But I think what he's proven people wrong, if there were any doubters still out there, anyone who thinks that he's not committed to the cause, you know, he's not putting his body on the line for Everton Football Club. He's done that numerous times. He was the hero in the Merseyside derby, sealing that first Goodison Park win over Liverpool for 13 and a half years with great header at the Gladys Street. He overcame illness and injury that night to figure in that big game for Everton, and he's done it on numerous occasions now, and he's reaping his rewards, and it's great to speak to him, and great for him to have that smile back on his face.
Yeah, it was nice to see him get the moment in front of the away fans as well. Like, it was a great atmosphere in that away end, and because James Tarkowski had done what he often does when he gets the opportunity and switched the teams around after the coin toss, it meant that Calvert-Lewin's goal was in front of those away fans. So I mean, that was great to see. Chris, I mean, I think I was pleased at that point because I thought Everton deserved the goal, and I thought they'd been playing with a little bit of authority, which is something that we don't see them do very often, and I think this was one of the few games when they've had more possession than their opponents, and often it's those games that they struggle a little bit. And at that point, I was feeling relatively pleased about the performance, but it very quickly went the other way. I was really... Where my frustration kicks in from last night is the game management from an Everton perspective, because having got that goal, there was a brief moment or two where Kenilworth Road was silenced and Everton had the momentum on the pitch and in the stands. And what they didn't do was they weren't able to see it through and properly take control of the game. In fact, they just, for whatever reason, you know, Luton, after the goal, won a few tackles. They won back the crowd, and then that galvanised them. And I was disappointed at how easily Everton fell into that trap, really, because we know this is an Everton side which is typically so effective when it does take a lead in a game. But we really didn't see the best of that last night. And obviously, it was only 7 minutes... until Luton got the equaliser. Wasn't the best goal from a defensive point of view. Obviously, Ashley Young booed all game by the home fans, of course, for his Watford connections. Luton and Watford are big rivals, although strangely, maybe not strangely, but it's a bit of double standards, or they just had forgotten that Abdoulaye Doucouré also played
Joe demanding for Doucouré
for Watford. He didn't get through, although I think he might have only had about 28 touches, so the opportunity to boo him might not have been there as much. You know, a difficult game for Abdoulaye to get into. But yeah, you know, it was a tough one. I mean, it was a good ball, good long deep ball into the box, and Elijah Adebayo, he's had a very good season, his first season in the Premier League. One of several players in that Luton side who I think have shown that if you have the physical attributes as well as the heart and the determination to never stop running, you can have you can cause real problems to teams, even in the Premier League and even for an unfancied side. He's done that all season. Had he not had the injury problems he's had over the last few months, I don't think it's too difficult to imagine that Luton would have had at least more than the 1 point that they currently need to overhaul Nottingham Forest going after that point last night against Everton. Well, I mean, not everybody will get this reference, and I know you won't like it, Chris, such as your dislike for it. But I mean, that long ball to the back post, and the way he collected it over the head of Ashley Young on his chest, obviously a physical mismatch there. It was very much like an NFL kind of play when you have the quarterback throwing deep to a wide receiver, and they just pick it out of the air in the corner. Young won't be too pleased with that. Left on the floor for it as well because he fell, much to the joy of the Luton fans. But it was a relatively decent finish from Adebayo on the dropping himself, hitting the ball on the spin, got it past Pickford. It was a frustrating goal to concede at a poor time to concede, I think, Chris.
Sorry, I'm just watching a car undertake everyone there on the M1 as we go past a huge Amazon sort of warehouse by the looks of things. Anyone give that a bit of a geographical reference? There's quite a few points to address there, actually. I think just to start with, I'll go back to what you were alluding to before, Joe, in the old Kenilworth Road experience, as you say. It really was, it seemed to be believed, for those of you who haven't been there, for both Joe and I, it was ticking off the last one on the list for us at the moment. We've done the full 20 as it stands in the Premier League. We'll have to wait and see if we get some new ones for next season. But yeah, there's not. It's been a while since I've seen a Premier League background quite like that. I think actually probably the closest one, they might not like to hear this, was Vicarage Road back in the day when I went there, although that's been changed a while since then. I think that was back in the mid-noughties trip there to Vicarage Road, their old Watford rivals, and it sort of reminded me a bit of that, although I think they spruced that one up a bit. Yeah, so like you say, it was that cup tie feel, and with the crowd, I mean, in terms of the Ashley Young barricade, it was absolutely, I mean, he was handling it well, until he, I mean, if only he handled, you know, Big Adebayo as well as he was handling the crowd, because he seemed pretty sort of unfazed by it all. I mean, we were just quite close to the pitch by where the away director's box was, which is like the Colin Chong and Kevin Felwell over our shoulders. But
and some 777.
Yes, there was. Some of the 777 delegation were also there. I think it was Keith Steele. But yeah, as Young, who was playing left back, of course, went over to take a throw in. And this old boy appointed him out to you, and he was giving him loads. This OAP with the white hair, and he's pointing the finger and
on the front row, bending over the advertising.
Yeah. I think it was either his or his mate's grandson was next. I was like, what an example, you know? Just watch Pops how he does it. I mean, so yeah. It was absolutely intimidating. It was good. It was like, you know, it was a real throwback, even sort of inside the bowels of the stadium. It wasn't like anything I'd seen in years and years. Bit of charm to it, really. I mean, nice people on the staff there. And I think you've got your moments missed at half time. I went into you had to go through like a club suite to get to the toilets, and there was David Moyes. It was like a scene from some like 80s social club or something like that. We're going back to Peter Kay now, Phoenix Knights or something like that. There was Davey, fair enough, the long standing Everton manager. I nodded to him across the crowded room. He nodded back. But yeah, I mean, what a setup. And
for anybody that is listening, if you didn't already know, obviously Chris Beasley, friend of the stars here, long term friend of Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and hailing David Moyes across a crowded social room. I mean,
yeah. Well, you know,
I've got 3 hours to put up with this after the hour of the podcast.
Yeah. On back to the game. Yeah. The goal. Yeah. It was poor, wasn't it? Like you said, Everton. Once they do get their noses in front, you like to see them sort of hang on. They've done it so many times this season. You know, that's still actually the big challenge for Deitch. Marco Silva was in the job at Everton for 18 months, and he was by the time he was sacked with Everton in the relegation zone, they'd never once come back from a losing position to win a Premier League game, and Deitch has still got that something. So it's a long-standing problem, but once they do get their noses in front, they are usually okay, and you'd like to hope that after, you know, a lesser Luton team who they've only been in a relegation fight with because of the points deduction, once they've done that, done the hard yards, quietened the home crowd, that they didn't hang on. Yeah, it was a physical mismatch, like you say. Elijah Adebayo, he just bullied Young, didn't he, off the ball, just bundled him off there, and the low finish, Branthwaite just couldn't get there in time, low shot past Pickford. So it was disappointing, and I think Jack Harrison maybe gave the ball away cheaply in the build up. I mean, he actually went on to do very well, put a real shift in, made that clearance just before Branthwaite right at the end, else he had a chance to put Everton back in front. But yeah, it was disappointing, and at that point, you know, you just wondered where was going to be the old same old story. Luton push on for the win, but to be fair, no, Everton did sort of regroup, and although it was Luton did look the most likely through most of the second half, you know, they had their own chances as well. Calvert-Lewin had a decent header in the second half that forced a good save from Kaminski. So yeah, it was probably a fair result, but yeah, there was disappointment. Deitch picked a team to win, they got their noses in front, it was a chance to beat Luton the first time of the season, and they didn't do that. But yeah, I like the way that they kept battling right through to the end.
Yeah, I mean, they did battle through to the end. Well, really, I mean, I think you might be being a little bit kind of generous there, Chris. I think that they battled right at the end when it mattered, but I was genuinely pretty disappointed with that second half. Yeah, we got to the goal there, and then after that, game settled down a little bit. Luton had another push just to, full half time. Ben Godfrey cleared a header from Carlton Morris. I think it looked like it was on the line. It might have been drifting just wide. Then second half, and in fairness, look, obviously Evan has confirmed safety. Luton needed the win and played like they were needed the win as well. Like, I think certainly from the hour, last 15 minutes, they dropped the defender, put another attacker on, and moved the wing backs to wingers, and really went for it and put Evan under pressure. But I was disappointed that once Evan conceded a goal, they never really seized the initiative back in that game. They did have a couple and possibly had the best chances in the second half, but they were kind of from rare breaks forward. First one, Jack Harrison had a looping volley, took a big deflection. Kaminski did really well to claw it out the top corner. And then there's Dominic Calvert-Lewin that you referenced. Dominic Calvert-Lewin headed that you referenced there. I think Dwight McNeil at the back post headed it across. And it was a good header from Calvert-Lewin. Close range, just another very good reflex save from Kaminski, who had a good game. But at the other end, Lewin were trying, albeit without any real success, to cut Everton open. They had a few good chances, a few good set pieces, which, I think it might have been Mengi on one and then Barkley on another, had clean headers that they should have done better with. Barkley had that good shot from the edge of the area that Pickford saved. There's a moment when he came very, very close to playing in Adebayo behind the last man, and Tarkowski just about managed to get a foot in there and just prevent the ball from breaking the Everton defence. But it was building towards a big finish. Obviously, the crowd were getting on. As critical as I might be being of Everton, I do understand the different trajectories of these two sides meant that it was probably inevitable that we would see what we saw in the last 15 minutes. Stoppage time was the really big one, I think. 7 minutes of stoppage time and six efforts from Luton. Let's just go through this in time. First, you had the... he had a very good save from Jordan Pickford.
He had a low one.
The low one as Luke Berry glanced that header towards the back post. That was a good save. You then had from the resulting corner, I'm not sure, I think it might be, was it Burke at the back post? Someone had a bicycle kick that Jack Harrison was there on the back post, hit his shoulder, stood up tall, hit his shoulder, and he blocked it. That was going in. And then in the crowd of bodies from the next corner, that ball broke to Andros Townsend, obviously another former Blue and Luton's ranks, and I think we all thought it was going in. Bob Edwards after the game said he was right behind it, thought it was going in, and then Jared Brantford, he stuck out that big leg and diverted it, and in the midst of the melee the final whistle went, and then there was a little bit of a scrap, I think. But after the game, as I said, I spoke to Deitch about this, and I think that's what he was taking from it in terms of where he saw the positives coming from that game. He was disappointed with the way it unfolded in the second half. Thinks he found his players were a little bit off it. Said he could understand why to a certain extent, but still frustrated by it. And then where he took half from, like I say, was that last 6 minutes. Luton bombarded the Everton goal. Everton didn't need to hold on to a point. I just think back, I was just there thinking, if this was a game that had something riding on it, like we thought it probably was going to for so long, that last six, 7 minutes would have been horrible.
Yeah.
Fortunately, it wasn't. But those players still put their bodies on the line to protect the point, and he took a lot of pleasure from that, I think, Sean Dyche. I mean, and I imagine you do as well, Chris.
Yeah, in fact, just as we speak, we're just entering Northamptonshire. Is that Dyche's home county? Are we in Dyche land now? Dyche territory?
Quite possibly.
Joe's lost for words once there. It was the Alamo, wasn't it, at the end there. Luton, Andros Townsend, of all players, actually let go by Deitch. Never actually got to see him play in a first team match. He had that long term injury, was it the ACL, that he suffered at his former club Crystal Palace in the FA Cup quarter final the year before under Frank Lampard, because Townsend he had a decent old year. It was a troubled time for Everton when he came there, and he contributed well, to be fair, before that injury. And I think he's shown at times, and Luton is still life in the old dog yet this season. And the fact that he came off the bench, and if he'd have it wouldn't have broken Everton's hearts, but if he'd have grabbed that winner for Luton, I mean, goodness me. But yeah, you could just see the way that Jared Brantway celebrated that. I think there's been words from Deitch earlier this season. He's you think I'm a bit of an Everton dar, but I think that's just in some ways even more old school than myself, in that he doesn't like people defenders celebrating tackles and things like that. He thinks, you know, it's old school centre half himself, he's just doing the job. But surely even old taskmaster Sean Dyche couldn't begrudge young Jared Branthwaite that, you know, that fist pump, that celebration, almost like he'd scored a goal, when he knew the importance of that interception, that deflection that he made right at the end. And as you mentioned, John Pickford pulled out the save again. I think he's one. We've got a piece from Joe coming up on John Pickford perhaps later, and then Jack Harrison with the one that he cleared. You know, it was all hands to the pump, and Luton needed it. You know, they're very much they needed a win last night. I think they knew that. Forest go to Sheffield United, is it today? They play Sheffield United bottom of the table, and you know, you'd expect them to get something from there. So that felt like a big opportunity miss for Luton. I mean, you often see that. I mean, it's one of my bugbears. I mean, colleagues laugh about this one. I don't like keepers coming up in the last minute. It's because Jimmy Glass scored a fluke of a goal for Carlisle all those years ago. It never used to happen. Since then, they all fancy themselves. I mean, fair play to Alisson at Liverpool across the park. If you've got the technique to head it in, fair enough. But when they come up, and then, you know, and even worse when the corner taker aims for them rather than somebody who might actually score. So yeah, he came up a bit Kaminsky, and it was chaos, wasn't it, in there? And Everton held out. I mean, like you say, there was a bit of a melee after the final whistle blew. I think Luton felt that he should have had time to take the corner, but they'd already had over a minute over the allotted six that we were given. And you know, the referee has to end the laws of the game state that, you know, it has to be a suitable point to end the game. And you know, there's no point blowing your whistle as the corner kick is being taken, as Clive Thomas infamously did. You know, Clive Thomas, so infamous with Evertonians in that Sweden-Brazil World Cup game, he infamously blew the final whistle as the corner kick was being taken. Tim Robinson said time was up, and I think there's just a bit of a fracas after that one. But you know, Everton had done their job.
I don't check Chris's abhorrence of goalkeepers going up when they're siding to win. I don't think it's about technique. Chris Shaw is about having another body and the chaos factor in there, and what happens with second balls and things like that. I enjoy it. And I see its value in the game, just to make clear. I mean, that probably brings us on to what is possibly the bigger talking point from an Everton perspective. Obviously, yeah, this wouldn't really get a look in if there was a relegation fight on the line, but because there isn't, you know, we can kind of, you know, distract ourselves with things like that. And that is Ross Barkley. Now, look, I mean, it was always going to be a big talking point in the game. I think everyone knew that. He's on the front of the programme. He's a talking point, obviously, every time that Everton come up against him, for so many reasons. Obviously, came through the Blues Academy, wonderful player, wonderful talent, and then left in such difficult circumstances. Yeah. You know, got to the point where then Mayor of Liverpool, Joe Anderson, was writing letters to the FA and complaining to the police about his switch to Chelsea, which, you know, it harks us back to a different time on many, many levels. But, you know, look, I've been in this job for two years, I think. But I've had two summer transfer windows, both of which have seen Ross Barkley be a free agent, and both of which has led to, at various points in the summer, a lot of talk about whether or not he would be the right signing for Everton. I think we saw that debate reignited again this time. He played well, Ross Barkley, didn't he, Chris? Apparently Carragher was purring about him on Sky. Obviously, we don't know that so much because we weren't listening to it. We were there in the stadium. But we know he's a talented player. He's on a free at the end of the season. Do you have any kind of sympathy for some of the people, the chorus of opinions that are saying, I wouldn't mind having him back?
Make sure we stay on the M1 here, listeners. we don't want to head off to Silverstone there. Like I say, it's a game of opinions, and I can see why there's some Evertonians think that would be the right move, but it's not for me. I don't think they will be bringing him back, and I certainly wouldn't bring him back. And I'll go through the reasons why. Yeah, he was actually he was the sponsor's man of the match, wasn't he? We heard over the PA system last night. Yeah, like you say, man of the moment. You know, it was all going to be about him playing against his former club. I'll start by saying, as a rule of thumb, I don't think that you should go back in football. I mean, there's going to be incidences here. We're going to go, you know, people are going to say, oh, well, this A, B, or C came back and did all right. I just don't think that you should go back. I think it's very seldom as good as it was in the first one. I got goes for players and managers. Howard Kendall, of course, came back twice for Everton. The second spell was worse than the first, the most successful manager in the club's history. The third spell was worse than the second, you know, when he only stayed up on goal difference, was it, in 98? People say it's all exceptions to the rule. David Moyes has done better in his second spell at West Ham than his first, but he was only there for about 5 minutes in the first spell, so that kind of changes things, I think, for me. Many players, Duncan Ferguson, David Unsworth came back. I mean, like Beyonds, he was pretty good in that second spell, and Ferguson did things in his second spell, but I just, as a general rule of thumb, I just don't think you should go back in football. It seems to me to be the hard rule in the head often, and certainly in Everton instances, it doesn't tend to work out as well as people would hope that it would. Ross Barkley, for me, is second only to Wayne Rooney in terms of talent in what Everton's own system has produced over the years. The Everton Academy, as it stands, he's the most gifted individual other than Rooney that I think that system has ever produced. Talk about you've been doing the job a couple of years. I remember 10 years ago when I was up at St James's Park, Ross Barkley scored a goal for Everton that I think very few other players could score. It's that one, of course, we don't remember. Everton won 3-0, picked up the ball in his own half, ran at half the length of the field, and went round the keeper, scored on his left foot. Great two-footed talent, amazingly gifted player, but he's never, unfortunately, fulfilled that amazing potential that he had. I think the big problem is decision making. He's matured. He's over 30. I think he's over 30 years of age now. He's a veteran player. We all grow up. We can get older and wiser, as we've seen with Jordan Pickford. The way his game's matured, he's always been immensely gifted. He's come on leaps and bounds in recent years as he's grown up on and off the pitch. And he's never quite. Ross never hit those heights that we all expected from him. He was also an England international from a young age. What a talent he was, but that decision making has always let him down, and maybe include the decision making, like a lot of players are thinking that the grass is always greener away from Goodison. I mean, I've learned over the years that a lot of sort of boy up blues have to a certain extent been thrown under the bus in terms of how their acrimonious Everton exits have sort of been portrayed to the wider world, and it's certainly not always been the case that they're for want of a better word, a Judas. I don't think that was anything that was ever labelled at Michael Ball, but you know, we did Michael recently on his Goodison Park My Home series, and he was talking very frankly about when he left Everton, and how basically the club came to him and said, you know, he thought it was about signing a new contract, and they said we've accepted offers from you from Rangers, where he ultimately went playing, Middlesbrough and Liverpool. You know, this was just 1 year after Nick Barnby had infamously crossed the park, so you can imagine how that would have played out, you know, but the way Michael Ball would have been portrayed. So we know that Ross Barkley left Everton under acrimonious circumstances, but he, like a lot of them, you know, he does remain an Evertonian at heart. He's a boyhood blue. We saw with his X-rated tweet before the Bournemouth game, he was willing Everton on to stay up last season. Of course, this year he's been a direct rival, and he's enjoyed probably his best season for a number of years. Like I've already stated, he's immensely gifted player, but it's not quite happening for him. And there's a thing you said, Joe, in your verdict, you're not too sure where he would fit in the Sean Dyche team anyway. And for all those reasons, it's not one I would go to. And like yourself, it'd probably be some other Luton players, not necessarily saying that they should do, but there's probably other ones in there who might catch your eye and be sort of on your list of priorities before somebody like Ross Barkley.
I understand the conversation. You know, he's clearly a very talented player. He's a player that has matured through his career. I think that, you know, can he do things that other players in the midfield can't? Yeah, he probably can. You know, when he's at his best, he would add something to Everton's side. And Everton's side that not only lacks a little bit of creative guile in the middle, but also lacks strength and depth. When, you know, you think that Everton's backup centre midfield's really, you know, Andre Gomes, who, for all the talent he's had, has flat to deceive in recent years, mainly because he's been held back by injuries. Where you think, well, maybe if you brought back Ross Barkley, you'd probably have a more talented player. Well, sorry, you'd have a player who is as talented, if not more, with a better fitness record, probably a lot cheaper. But I don't think it happens this summer, and look, we could be wrong, but I'd be very surprised for a couple of reasons. One, I definitely don't think he's a Kevin Fellwell signing. I think that, you know, the reality is that Ross Barkley has been looking for clubs late into the summers of the past 2 years. When he's been available on a free, Everton have been a club in both windows that have needed to look for clever deals where they could. They decided not to go to Ross Barkley in both of those summers. There'll be reasons behind that, and I think that, you know, it's quite telling. The fella hasn't gone there before. I think that's probably due to a host of reasons, including how he fit into that dressing room. And I certainly don't really think he's a Deitch player either. And I think that we know what Deitch demands from a player. If Ross Barkley was to play as a kind of a, you know, an 8 or a 10, you know, be a creative attacking player in the midfield, then we know what he does with Abdoulaye Doucouré. And okay, part of that is because of necessity, he doesn't have a lot of options in that position. But what Deitch clearly likes about Abdoulaye Doucouré is his mobility, his physicality, his fitness, his ability and his willingness to go up and down that pitch, to almost play in two different roles at the same time for Everton, where he can sit back in a three-man midfield and do his defensive work, but because of his energy, he can also get up there to support Dominic Calvert-Lewin when things are working well. I think that it requires a lot of discipline and a lot of fitness from someone who's going to play in that role for Deitch. And we see that again, probably backed up by the fact that we haven't seen Arno Danjuma play there this season, who, you know, I think Arno Danjuma's favourite position would be playing almost as a number 10 behind someone like Dominic Calvert-Lewin as that support striker. He hasn't had a look in that position. He obviously hasn't had much of a look in out wide either. But if Deitch was minded to experiment along those lines, and he did, you know, he's had Danjuma there to do it, and he hasn't even done it when they've been chasing games or when they've been winning games or you know, for the last 5 minutes just to experiment. Didn't even do it last night, for instance. So I just don't see the, you know, given what Deitch requires and demands of his players, I just don't see Barkley as fitting in there. And that's kind of before you then bring in the emotional baggage that would come with such a move. So I, you know, look, Everton, whatever happens this summer, there are two truths. One, Everton are going to have to rebuild the squad. They have no choice on that. They have to make sure that they're better equipped for next season than they were this season, when, albeit they've overperformed their expectations with a threadbare squad, have done very well to amass, you know, points that should have them well clear of a relegation fight and well up the table. They've still at times been left vulnerable by the fact that they have such few options. And not only does Deitch need to strengthen the first team this summer, him and Fowler also need to find a way of strengthening that bench, because more and more clubs are getting better and better equipped, and Everton are going to get left further and further behind on that case if they're not careful. Especially if strong clubs come up this season, that, you know, Leicester are going to come up, they will be a force for Everton to reckon with next season. We suspect that Ipswich will come up, and they're well backed and sensibly backed, intelligently backed. Their progress has been, but they will have a lot of work to do to build a strong Premier League squad next season, and that probably makes things a little bit easier than if it was, say, going to be a Leeds and a Southampton. Instead, it might just be one of those two, maybe neither, through the playoff system. But Deitch and Fowler are going to have to build a squad there of maybe 18 players rather than the 13, 14 he's trusted this season. And Second truth is they're not going to have very much money to do with either. First, they've got, you know, the financial issues, which we all know about. Club is basically going from month to month on the finances, relying on other people's money to keep it afloat at the moment. We hope for some clarity in the, you know, coming weeks, if hopefully, on that scenario. And that isn't me saying what I'd like the outcome to be, because I think we all see some clear issues with 777 and why they might not be the best answer for the club, albeit at the minute we don't really have many alternatives available to us. And like I've written a few times over the past week, it'd be great if there is someone waiting in the wings, if they could show their faces now and perhaps give us an alternative vision for the future. But there isn't going to be a lot of money to spend, and even if there was money to spend, Everton's profit and sustainability situation makes it complicated as well. So look, Everton are going to have to go to players that they might not previously have wanted to go to, look for creative solutions to difficult problems. But at this present moment in time, I'd be surprised if that led to Ross Barkley. But it was nice to see him yesterday trying to pull strings. You could see that, you know, I asked Rob Edwards about him after the game and he was glowing in him. And then one of the follow-up questions, he was saying about how, you know, the time almost, Ross Barkley plays the game almost at a different speed to the most other players on the pitch. And I think there was an element of truth in that last night. You know, it's clear that there are attributes he could offer to that Everton side that might be valued, but I just don't think there's probably a place for them in that Deitch Fellwell setup at this present moment in time. And that's from a footballing perspective. And again, before you then get into the emotional aspects of it as well, Chris.
Definitely. Like I said, we both argued that the case there would be a certain emotional baggage with that would come with it. I mean, as you say, actually, to be fair, Wayne Rooney, he was another one. He had an even more acrimonious exit than Ross, and he came back. And I think, although it was an interesting one, wasn't it? He actually ended up scoring more goals that season than he'd done in his previous two, before the turn of the year, and then ended up playing midfield under Sam Allardyce second half of the season, and then he was out the door. So I think that probably worked well for Wayne Rooney in terms of the rest of his life, and the fact that, you know, he's got a family of Evertonians back on Merseyside is probably another example again of not to go back. Yeah, it just wouldn't be right. He's as we've both said extensively, he's a very gifted player. Like I said, I would literally put him second only to Rooney in terms of the talents that Everton's academy has produced. But I don't think it's the right deal for Everton at this moment in time, just saying that it wasn't either last year or the year before. But it'd be interesting to see whether he does end up, you know, if he doesn't end up staying at Luton.
Probably just finish up on this point, Chris. Obviously, Sean Dyche said he didn't care who stayed up. He said it was up to those clubs that are in the battle to fight among themselves. Do we care, Chris? Okay. And is it right for us to care? And, you know, because we do have horses in this race. You know, I've just gone into length there about saying how difficult this summer might be and how challenging next season could potentially be. There is a case probably for Everton wanting Luton to stay up, I should think, isn't there? And that being on the basis that, look, Forest have made a mess of this season. It feels like there must be stuff wrong behind the scenes there a little bit, because I know they've changed managers, but the talent that they have in their squad, they shouldn't really be in the position they are. I know they've had a points deduction. I think they've been very fortunate with their points deduction, especially in comparison to Everton's first one. I think Forest could have, you know, I think had a bit of leniency there. But they're very much underperforming. But it feels, to me, I look at that Forest squad and I think there's more potential for them to get things right next season and end up, if things do go right and they do have a cohesive plan and structure and that Nuno can find some kind of consistency there, it feels like they've got the players to all of a sudden very quickly take themselves out of the relegation fight and into the mid-table. Whereas with Luton, you get the impression that even if they were to stay up, it would again, although they'd probably be able to build on what they've done this season, and what they've done this season has been impressive anyway, they're still only in a relegation. They certainly have hope because two teams above them have had significant points deductions. And I feel like Luton would be... I feel like next season would be a very, very different prospect if, say, for instance, it was a league that consisted of Luton, Ipswich and, say, Nottingham Forest or... Luton, Ipswich and, say, Norwich or West Brom coming up from that playoffs, as opposed to potentially being a league that includes Leicester, Forest... and then one or two of Southampton and Leeds.
Yeah. By the way, we're just about to leave the M1 and go on the M6, so we're just focusing on that one, as Joe was speaking. Yeah, we should care, and we do care on many other levels. Just on like every football level, we've all got opinions, and we like some players, and we like some teams, and we dislike some players, and we dislike other teams. I think just from the personal point of view as we enter Leicestershire now. I prefer to see Luton to stay up than Nottingham Forest, but I think by failing to beat Everton last night, I mean, we're speaking now before Forest play Sheffield United and before we find out what happens with Nottingham Forest's appeal as well. But I think that was Luton's big chance. That's why, hence why they had the keeper coming up and throwing the kitchen sink at Everton last night, because that was a big chance to try and sort of turn the screw with Nottingham Forest, and they only got the 1 point instead of the three that...
Is there any part of you, Chris, that thinks actually it might be more beneficial for Everton if Andros Townsend had scored last minute?
Well, that's for the chess, isn't it?
That is getting into those rounds and... Wow. Like that. But I can
see where you're coming from.
Bearing in mind that a point...
Yeah.
It's going to be...
I'd like
it's
to...
It's difficult for Everton to... Obviously, a point takes Everton a point further clear of Brentford in terms of consolidating 15th. What it doesn't really do is help the battle to overhaul Crystal Palace in 14th, which does matter. Bearing in mind that battle might go this weekend.
Yeah.
You know...
Yeah, I'll reinforce everything you said there, Joe. I totally agree in that there's a lot more scope for Forest to be stronger next season, possibly, than what there is for Luton Town to be stronger than next season. But let's hope, given that Everton were only in a relegation fight this year because of the points deductions, that hopefully they can be thinking sort of beyond that in terms of let's concede to Andros Townsend in the last kick of the game. So Luton stay up, and they'll be poorer next season than Nottingham Forest might be. So, yeah, I see where you're playing devil's advocate there, but I know can't be going down that route. I think from a personal point of view, the way Forest have gone about themselves, you know, we've both spoken in our pieces, we've been to, City Ground the past couple of years now, some absolutely tasteless chants coming out from their supporters, the classic sign on. Got it very briefly from Luton last night, just the once. But, Forest are sort of prolific on this score, and just the way they conducted themselves. Obviously, they had an axe to grind after what happened with the referee at Goodison Park, and you could see where they were unhappy, but, just the way they went about that, and the way they've been complaining. Oh, we're only briefly in Leicestershire there, we're now in Warwickshire before I'd even finished my segment there. So on so many levels, we probably would prefer Luton to stay up to Forest. I mean, it's not done yet. I mean, Burnley have actually, defeated at Goodison Park, probably off the top of my head, the only game they've possibly lost over the last eight or something like that. But so their race isn't done yet. So yeah, I would prefer Luton to stay up, but I think that was their big chance last night, and hopefully Everton can look beyond thinking that there's have three teams who are worse than in the division. But yeah, of course, when you do look at those teams in the Championship, you'd prefer it to be possibly the lesser lights, given that it's such a precarious time for Everton in terms of the finances of the club ownership. And of course, you're sort of the worst possible time for Everton to have a crisis like this, given that it's such a once in a lifetime moment for the fans with the final season at Goodison Park, and looking forward hopefully to a brighter future at the magnificent new stadium at Bromley Moor Dock.
Absolutely, Chris. On that note, I think we'll wrap this up on the M6 now. As Chris says, we're taking you through a tour of the Middle England counties, and we'll be stopping off at a service in not too long for Chris to buy me a can of pop and some sweets, I think. We'll be back with you on Monday. Just hopefully you've enjoyed listening to this. Let us know how you've gone now. It's the first time we've done one driving back, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts, because there's probably scope for us to do a lot more of this next season. We do a lot of these drives on the way back from away games. All we do is talk about the match anyway, and it means we can get a podcast that you think is worth listening to over to you earlier than we perhaps might do when we get them across on a Monday. Then I think it's something that we'd be willing to explore. So, you should know what we are on Twitter, or our email addresses or things like that. Let us know, because the summer is going to be another summer where we try and look at what we try and produce for you as a package, both in terms of written and audio and video, and we're always grateful for any insight. So if you're willing to share any, please do. And hope you have a good weekend. And just probably one last time, isn't it nice to be able to watch a football game, Chris, without having any jeopardy riding on it? Probably the first time. I say I took over just over two years ago.
The Burnley game.
And the Dykes Burnley game, Everton have forgotten how to win. And I think I can quite honestly say that's the first game, perhaps other than the Arsenal one at the end of that season when Everton were safe, that Everton have had a game where there's not really been any crushing pressure on them. So, and we've got two more to come.
Yeah, definitely. Let's enjoy it while we can. This has been the Royal Blue Podcast on the road.